This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hartill. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
Here we are again. Another weekend is upon us. I hope it's off to a good start. Thank you for spending some time with Jack and I. Happy New Year to all of you. I guess we're into the second week of the year. Second week, Jack?
Second trading week, yes.
Second?
First full trading week.
Full first trading week, yep, indeed. And January is an important month. I pay a lot of attention to the rotation that takes place. Last year's winners may not carry into this year. Some new themes may emerge. And some of last year's winners do carry through. NVIDIA certainly is carrying its momentum through. But as the month goes, often the year goes. So January is a very, very important month. Don't take my word for it. Let's ask Tony Dwyer. He works on Wall Street, so he has all the answers. He's also our... he's got a big one. U.S. Macro Group Chief Market Strategist, and he sits on the firm's U.S. Operating Committee. That must be exciting, hanging out in the Operating Committee with a bunch of other operators there, Tony. You enjoy that time?
Yeah, I do. I always like that. Anytime I can help, it's great.
Oh, you're such a nice guy. I can't handle meetings much longer than about 8 minutes. I don't know how long your meetings run for, but yeah, man. You know, you're from
about
New York.
8 minutes.
8 minutes, yeah. Yeah, I got to walk. I got to move. How are you, my good friend?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well, Wolfie.
As always, thank you for all of your previous years of support to Jack and I and to our business that we run. Of course, our job is to look for good, suitable investment ideas that are going to make our clients some money. And you've always been very, very helpful, Tony. I want to thank you for that. New Year is upon us. So let's begin. In your opinion, and again, I know you sort of take opinion, put it aside, and look at the data. You may not have looked at this data. It's a bit of a pop quiz. But any relationship between the performance of the month of January and the year itself?
Wolfie, I don't believe that really correlates so well anymore. There's been a lot of volatility in that data series over the last few years because it used to be driven by mutual fund activity at year end and then how you start the year. I don't know that that's as important anymore, given that the quant funds and the algorithmic trading and all those other things that influence the market are different nowadays. So I'm not a big fan of those seasonal calls. It's always going to depend upon interest rates.
Interesting. We bring a fellow on that I used to work with, Tony. You'll have to meet him once. You'd actually really enjoy him, Don Velo. He has 20 years on you. And he just continues to pay very close attention to the markets. And he does believe in seasonal investing. And he also uses data and looking for the correlations. Anyways, it's all about increasing probability. There is no sure thing in the world of investing. And Tony, it was incredible. Jack and I subscribe to Bespoke Investment Research. And they have an author, Ben Carlson is his name, continuously data mining, as you do. And he posts various data sets. And what I love, and the beauty of the business and the challenge of the business is the short term is virtually impossible to predict. I think a weatherman does a much better job of predicting the weather, which is a very short term, you know, today's weather, tomorrow's weather, than they do in the long range. Your long range weather forecast, I don't know if they're less accurate than the short range, but in our business, it's the opposite. The randomness of annual returns from the stock market, when you put it on a scattergram, it's classic. It's all over the place. Anywhere from up 50 to down 50%, you pick your number in between. And that's basically, no one predicted, virtually no one predicted 2024's outcome with the S&P 500 being up 20+% in U.S. dollar terms. I think it was closer to 25%.
The 2023 outcome for the S&P.
Excuse me. Thank you, Jack. Thank you. And everyone tends to predict, you know, plus or minus and more of the plus side, plus 7, 8, 9%. Pathetic. No point even asking strategists for such calls. I know Tony doesn't even bother making calls. But the long term is different kettle of fish. So short term, highly random, Tony. It's amazing. But when you get up to 5-year returns, 10-year returns, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50, 70, the number for the S&P 500 tends to be somewhere between 10 and 15%. If I were to draw a line across this piece of paper, the number is about 10.5%. So the longer term average returns hit what you expect. But the randomness of the short term is unbelievable. Tony, I'm going to throw it over to you, and then I'm going to take you into the subsectors. What do you make of all that, what I just said to you? Short term random, long term very predictable. What do you make of it?
Well, I think it's absolutely absolutely correct. I mean, that's the data. You can't fight the data. You can try and make excuses for it, but that's what it shows. We don't put out S&P 500 targets and things of that nature because it is so random and unpredictable on a near-term basis. What we do at Canaccord is we use the macroeconomic data, you know, the employment reports, the inflation reports, lending data, things like that, and tie it into whether the market's overbought, oversold, or where it looks. And I think when you employ the different practices in our business, it makes for avoiding risk at good times, and it makes for adding to risk at the right times. So I don't dispute anything that you said, Wolfie. I think it's one of those things where anybody that I've been doing this 35 years, a little less time than your other friend. And what I found is I haven't found a single portfolio manager that's great every year, ever.
Tony, here's one for you. Again, I'm going to stick with Ben Carlson's work. And again, I've seen these scattergrams before. JP Morgan puts one out every year as well. You've seen them where you take the 10, I think it's now 11 subsectors of the market, large cap, mid cap, small cap. Those are just styles or sizes. But then you go REITs, international stocks, bonds, emerging markets, cash, and a few other flavors. You put them in a scattergram, see who performed best within each subsector. Again, the numbers are quite random. Once again, when REITs are hot for a couple of years, they tend to go cold for a couple of years, back into the midpoint, et cetera. But there's a commonality here, Tony. This I really, really like. And I saw it. I showed Jack the data, and he took the data and circled the same thing I saw, which is great. That's the checks and balances that we offer to our clients. A lot of value in what I just said there. Two heads are better than one, and 1 + 1 does equal 3, new math. But consistently, Tony, within the top 25% of subsectors or styles, large cap tends to outperform. I always believe.
That's not necessarily true over the long duration.
I got 10 years of data in front of me. I got 10 years of data.
It's been long over the very long term. Small caps tend to outperform, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and you're right as well. In fact, what I've caught over the long term, Tony, is mid caps actually outperform small caps. I think the last 30 years, that's been the place to be. Jack, please, over to you.
When you're talking small cap and mid cap, Wolf, you're talking about the U.S. market because small caps in Canada for Canadian investors. Be cautious because those small caps are commodity related companies. So I do want to add that.
They're not small, they're micro.
And warning.
Our large caps are America's mid caps.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The point I wanted to make, when you talk about the long term, so short term, lots of noise, attracts a lot of attention, a lot of clickbait out there. There is.
Good, that's good. I know, it's good.
Process, process, process. So if you want to capture the long term gains that you're talking about, I'm going to say 10 to 12% of the S&P 500. Because they are amazing, especially when you put compounding in effect. You have to have a process that is able to capture those long-term gains and avoid the short-term noise.
And again, I'm going to take you to Tony. This sounds like a cop-out, but it's not. You got to stay invested. You got to stay long because the turns, when they happen, boy, do they ever happen quick. So Tony, I'm going to now ask you, 2024, just for fun, you're going to get it wrong. I know I'm going to get it wrong, but why not have some fun at being wrong? What's in for the year?
So I want to just say one thing,
please,
and you guys know this, and that is you got to stay long, but you also need an advisor that you can work with so that if you need the money, see, the reward has always got to be balanced against the need for capital. So if I have a college student, if I have a child going to college in 2 years and I know I need that money, then maybe I don't need to be significantly long. So I really do believe that's why you need an advisor. Because for people like me to come on these shows and make blanket statements without knowing the people listening's individual thing, I think that's totally inappropriate. It's something that somehow the media became as like this generalization. And it's not about that. It's about your own individual needs, which is why you and Jack exist.
I'll tell you, it's funny.
That's not a plug for you guys. It's a plug. It's an anti-plug for listening to people like me in the media telling you what to do without knowing who you are and what your financial position is.
You're making a very good point, Tony. And again, the amount of oversight that takes place in my world, the amount of people watching Jack and I and Zach and all of us manage money is incredible. There is so much oversight and so much disclosure today. It is insane. It's just the pendulum has swung in such a direction. In other words, we have to disclose fees and cumulative fees over and over and over again. Usually when you buy something, you know what you paid for when you buy, and that's the end of it. In our business, we got to repeat how much you paid for that information. But I'm going to parlay that, Tony. This is not for you, but I don't know how your system is in America. But up here in Canada, for all Canadians who work, you must contribute to the government pension plan, the Canada Pension Plan. Tony, it's amazing because the Canada Pension Plan is a one-size-fits-all. They have no idea anything about your investment objectives, and they do not care. They don't ask for your input. They don't tell you how much they're charging you. How much you put in is mandated by the government. It is communism extraordinaire. And what you put in versus what you get out, Tony, if I operated my business the way our government pension plan, yeah, please, phones ring, challenge me on this one here, I'd be fired. It's remarkable. I don't know if you ever ran the math on your pension plan. What's yours called, your government pension plan, Tony?
Not Social Security. Well, there's so many different kinds. There's state, there's federal, there's local, so there's community, there's private, there's public, there's a lot of different kinds.
But are you mandated to go into one government pension plan?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Oh, you're not
an expert in that field. I'm not an expert. Well, no,
but you don't pay into a government pension plan yourself, Tony, is what you're telling me.
Well, you have Social Security, but yeah.
Let me ask you this, Tony. You're a super successful Wall Street man. Will you collect Social Security when you retire?
Right now, everybody does, even if you don't need it. And I think that's
no, collecting it. Will you collect it?
People talk to.
Will you collect Social Security when you retire, Tony?
Yeah.
Basically, all Americans do collect it when they retire, Social Security.
I don't need it, and I'd rather give it to somebody with.
Will Bill Gates collect Social Security? Will Bill Gates collect Social Security?
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. So the Thompson family. Yeah, so the Thompson family, Ken Thompson, he's still working, he's our buddy's buddy. He will collect Canada Pension Plan. Anyways, our Canada Pension Plan, what we put in, what we get out, it is criminal that the government gets away with it. It's just a terrible, terrible plan. And I'm sharing this because it just increases how much we have to contribute to it. So what I have to do for my clients, our government pension plan doesn't have to do. I contacted them, by the way, Tony. There's no investor relations department. There is no public relations department. There's no committee I can speak to. No one I can speak to other than a typical government bureaucrat who answers average questions every day. And I have these questions about challenging the whole system, but I have no one to speak to. I am going to challenge Canada Pension Plan because I think it needs to change. We're going to take a quick break and get back to the world of happiness and expectations as it parlays into investing your money with our chief strategist, Mr. Tony Dwyer, live from Wall Street. It's Hi-Fi Radio. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York.
I know someone who's a part of it. His name is Tony Dwyer. He's our U.S. macro strategist, sits on the investment committee. I don't know why he does that, but I guess that's what they pay him to do. He's a very smart guy. It's all about data to Tony. No opinions, no personal opinions. Data and facts. Sample size often is quite small, which is incredible. How many times has this happened? Well, we only got one occurrence. And when it happened, we survived. We always survive. We always survive. It's amazing when I do watch Netflix and I spend time watching stuff on World War II. There's so much stuff on World War II. And, of course, my heritage was on the losing side of that one. But it's just fascinating to see that such an atrocity occurred, how long it occurred, and the amount of pessimism that must have been in the air. There is always dark days. And I find that when people retire, Tony, you'll appreciate this. When people retire, and we've been managing money for them, their mindset towards money and life really, really changes and causes them a lot of unease. A lot of stress occurs when people retire. No jerky movements is, I think, the summary of advice. As you are managing money, and as you get older, no jerky movements along the way. Just tweak, adjust. Like, I don't know if you ever played a violin, anything about a violin. You can tune with the big knobs at the end of the violin on the head of it. Or you can have the little fine tuning at the bridge. Of the violin. Little fine tuning along the way. No jerky movements when you enter it. Oh, go half into GICs now. No, not the way to do it. Smooth and steady. That's part of the process. That's part of the relationship, part of the advice that Jack and I do offer to clients. Tony, 2024. I'll tell you what's burning in Canadians' minds. I think the world as well. Who's going to be your next president and what's going to happen? Talk to us.
I found that trying to figure out the stock market environment based on who's going to win an election is a useless game.
I agree.
But
I do
with
agree.
That, I truly don't know. It's such a close call. And, you know, I don't like to guess with my money, and I most certainly don't like to guess with your money.
No money. No bet. Money. It doesn't cost you anything.
But that's what you're doing when you make it, when you're in my job and somebody asks you that question, you give a statement, then you're on the record with that statement. And I truly think it's too close to call. And who knows if there's even a third party that could come in to the game. So when you think about that, ultimately,
Elon Musk,
people
how about
don't
him?
Spend money based on.
Can you imagine Musk, Tony? Tony, could you imagine Musk being a contender?
I will say, Wolf, the market is bigger than the president and the presidential cycle.
I agree.
And 2016, when Donald Trump first got in, everyone expected it to be a disaster. Yep. The market actually crashed, I think, in the futures overnight. And then reversed and turned up the next day. And we had a lot of clients making emotional decisions saying, I want out of the market. I can't handle this guy. It would have been at that time. Look at where the market is now relative to where it was in 2016. It would have been a bad choice.
Yep, it would have been. But Tony, I tell you, business, I don't think the president's going to really affect business. But what he will affect is our listeners at home and listeners who are driving around the city right now and those who listen to our podcast. He's going to affect people. If Donald Trump wins, he is going to put people on edge for 4 years. The good news is 4 years does fly by. It's something on my radar. I'll tell you, Tony, Don Velo, again, I mentioned him before. He's a great guy. He lost his dog, and he's in mourning, and I feel for him. He's very distraught for almost 2 weeks now because of the passing of his puppy. Boy, we connect to it. Do you have a dog, Tony?
I do.
You love your dog, don't you?
I love my dog.
How old's your dog?
He's awesome.
He's eight. What kind of dog?
He's a Portuguese water dog.
Very
this
nice.
Is not the topic I thought we were doing.
It's radio, Tony. It's light. It's easy. It's life. Dogs are part of life. You know? Do you know the
study?
Excuse me. IDEX Labs and Zoetis. There's two stocks you can pay attention to, Tony. IDEX Labs does the X-ray equipment and the knee replacement, hip replacement for your puppy that you're going to one day probably
and
purchase.
They do so well because people love their pets.
That's
and they will overpay for taking care of them.
And then Zoetis is a spinoff from Pfizer. Pfizer stock hitting 52-week lows, the spinoff of the pet drugs flirting with new highs. So it's always parlayed back to business, but you know, it's about people too, Tony, and what's important to people. Their dogs are important to people. There was a fact, Tony, someone left their estate to their dogs. I saw it. Yeah, it was hilarious. Did you catch that? Ever catch that, Tony, that story?
Didn't Imelda Marcos, or not Imelda Marcos, oh my God, who's the real estate magnate from New York? Anyway, yeah, people do that, and God bless them. They can do whatever they want. It's their money.
And let's stay on the topic of money, Tony, because actually our next guest, Michael Hainsworth, he may have interviewed you before. He used to be on BNN. Have you ever been interviewed by Michael Hainsworth?
I don't remember.
He knows you. Yeah. Everyone knows Tony Dwyer, the man from Wall Street. Crypto, hot asset class, carry over from last year into this year, more product coming to market, SEC approving some new ETFs. It's an asset class. Buy into it or not. There's a documentary out there, Tony. You should watch this, all right? Because I'm sure some of your friends perhaps are even being interviewed. It's called The Price of Everything, and it's about the art market. And, of course, the galleries and the auctions that take place in New York often. And Sotheby's actually runs those auctions again, Jack. It's just fascinating. And how people view art as an asset class. And they will store 20 and 30 and 50 and 100 and $200 million into that asset class. And you think valuing the market and valuing stocks is tough, Tony. All right. How about this painting here, buddy? It's got three round circles. Like the colors? What's it worth? Hey, try that. $20 million but you hear the experts talk about that. You know, we debate our stock. You hear them talk about a piece of art. Oh, at least $20 million, maybe even 30. I don't know, somewhere between $20 and $30 million. That's what it's worth. Are you kidding me? Drive a truck through that. Wow. You know, also, Tony, it's incredible. The uber wealthy, man, they do exist, eh? And there's a few of them floating around your city. It's remarkable. And the way they view the world, the way, you know, other people view the world, it's just so night and day. We got a little tweet across our desk, Tony. NVIDIA. I don't know if this is true or not. It's comical. It's a client of ours sent it to us. Nancy Pelosi's husband recently purchased $5 million worth of NVIDIA stock. Stock rallies after the purchase. Conspiracy theory. Come on. You know, this just the stuff that people float out there. It just shows you what the world we live in. It's just unbelievable. It's a scattergram in the short term, but long term is what matters. Process is what matters. Getting started is everything. Tony, how's your savings plan working, by the way? I know I've teased you about this one before because Americans like to lever up, and I think that lever up game is done. Are Americans getting back into like a savings mode, you know?
I think they're taking advantage of the higher short-term interest rate environment, and that helps their investment side. But I think people that can save have always tried to save, and other people like the Dwyer family like to lever up.
And he laughs about it. How's the snow? I know you own a Bombardier sled, as we call them.
Yeah, there isn't any.
No snow, eh?
There isn't any in the Adirondacks. It's been awful.
I know at Worcester they're just getting flooded. We're gonna actually have a guest on in a couple of weeks. Wally Crowder's son. His name is Glenn Crowder. He's been doing ski reports and traveling the world like a true ski bum. I'm so jealous of this guy. I don't know how he does it. And he's gonna be talking to us about the leisure business. Leisure is a big category. I'm a huge believer in leisure. By the way, I gave you that song because I know my daughter really wants to go to New York once for Christmas and stay at the Trump Hotel where Home Alone took place. All about Home Alone, after all.
A lot of people watched that this year. That was a big movie again.
It's incredible. Sticking with the classics. I go back to Friends, buy quality. Stick with the classics. Be willing to be flexible and rotate because the classics can often become the dogs of the Dow. And we, by the way, picked up a couple of dogs of the Dow, Verizon and AT&T, Tony, right down there at the bottom. And that's been an interesting trade so far. Not bad. We're still long some U.S. Treasury bonds. That's kind of an interesting new trade for us and a bit of carryover from last year. But anyways, 2024 is off to an interesting start. Tony, not as concerned about the January effect. I am. That's fine. We're allowed to have different opinions.
Well, I still think we're in this intermediate term correction. It's got more to go. And then, you know, once it plays itself out, I think we've done a pretty good job of calling for some of these pullbacks and then adding into them. And it could get interesting if the Fed lowers rates and the Bank of Canada and the rest of the global central banks lower rates like the market thinks.
Yep.
It could prove stimulative. And
I think so. Yeah. No. Well, in terms of the bond side, I'm holding on until they cut rates for the first time, and then I'm thinking of selling my bonds then, so sell on the news. But our friend Don Velo, actually, I lost my thought. I'm going to bring it back here. Don Velo, at the end of last year, Tony, he said he expects, because of the presidential year, he says in the presidential year, the first quarter tends to present some weakness, but by about mid-March, enough weakness has occurred, the market tends to be quite strong leading in from March into the November period. And that sort of dovetails into what you're then believing, Tony, just a different spin on how he views it and why.
Yeah.
So a little slug between now and March and perhaps March break. You get yourself a break to the upside. Had a psychic on, Tony, Lynn, last fall, late in the year. Asked her a bunch of questions. She's an intuition expert. You know what she said? She said, Wolf, as you ask me about the market next year, what I see is an umbrella. And I said, does that mean it's going to rain? She said, no, an umbrella is going to keep you dry. So I see the government coming out with this great big umbrella and keeping everyone dry. That leads to me like an interest rate cut. Just said a different way. I don't know. Am I reaching at straws? Maybe, Tony, but why not? Try different things, keep my mind open, and have some fun along the way. Is that okay, Tony? You good with that? Not too heavy today?
I'm good with that, Wolfie.
Yeah. All right, buddy.
I'm good with that.
You go back to your one minute, New York minute, I should say. Hang out with the investment. Say hi to the guys in the committee, if you don't mind, from Jack and I. Give them a big warm hello. Say, how you doing, eh?
Always do, my friends. Please. Always do. Keep up the good work.
No problem. If any of them need my help, I'm just a phone call away. All right? Tony Dwyer, live from Wall Street, our key global macro strategist. Really, what he is, a good friend of mine. I love him very, very much. I want to thank him for his time. Michael Hainsworth is going to join us. We're going to talk about spending your kids' inheritance. Hey? Spending your kids' inheritance. I got you smiling, don't I? Stay tuned. It's going to be great.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto.
Now you must agree, the times they are a-telling, and the changing isn't free. You've read it in the tea leaves, and the tracks are on TV. Beware the Savage Show.
Happy New Year, my friends. I know I did it last week, but it's still the new year. It says 2024. If David Bowie was around, I'd have him in the studio and have him do a re-recording of that. But he's not. And yes, Jack said, oh, that's David Bowie. It is, indeed. And, next song we're going to play BD, Bob Dylan. But the times are changing, and, well, it's a new year, and lots to look at. Crypto follow through into the new year. The Security and Exchange Commission, the governing body in America, they have approved some more products, shall I say, to trade crypto assets, notably Bitcoin. And I'm really, really intrigued by the show about the price of everything in the art market. Yes, I'm sort of going backwards with my interest. I'm just fascinated by the art market. I don't know why. You know, crypto, it's still puffs of air, but it's real at the same time. It's remarkable. It's over a $1 trillion asset class now. I think about a $1.2 or $1.3 trillion asset class. I think the gold market is about a $2 trillion asset class. You have to find out what the art market is, Jack. Do me a favor next week. Do some work on that. Find out what is the value of the global art market. ChatGPT it or Google it or do something for me. Haynesworth? Michael Haynesworth, he's with us. Where's my jetpack? Very, very dynamic individual, Mr. Haynesworth. You probably remember him from BNN days. He went solo. He's creating content. He's marketing. He's promoting. He's helping people do things the way you can do them on 2024, using cameras and audio and video and editing and all kinds of interesting things. Michael, thanks for joining us. Welcome back to Hi-Fi Radio, my good friend.
Well, thank you very much for having me. One of the big projects I'm working on right now for a client is how to spend your kids' inheritance.
I love it. I really do. When you brought that to my attention, I said, that is absolutely hilarious. You know, it's like the lifestyle of the rich and famous taken to a different degree. But, you know, your little kids can be, sorry, I can't say that, but they can be pains. And every now and then, I say, you know, screw you. I'm going to spend everything. So let's have some fun with this, Michael. You know, we spend a lot of time. You know, hopefully, I want people to spend a lot of time building wealth. To build wealth, you have to work and you have to save and you have to repeat and you have to invest. So work, save, invest, repeat. And the problem is it takes about 25 years until you actually accumulate any kind of significant wealth. 40 years, oh my God, home free. And I'm going to play with small numbers. Michael, $5 saved a day. That's $1,800 a year. $5 a day invested at 9%. And the stock market, I've given you the data, it tends to run at about 10.5% over multi-decades. So we're going to be conservative. 9%, $5 a day invested. Michael, after 40 years, take a guess how much money that would be. 40 years, $5 a day.
Give me more. Give me $1,000,000.
$800,000. Good guess, buddy. $800,000. $5 a day. So the
all for the cost of a Starbucks coffee.
That's it. Say no to Starbucks. Say yes to saving. Invest it. $5 a day, but you just got to stick with the program. And the problem is, Michael, I don't know if you remember anything from mathematics class, a concept called rise over run, and then you had to draw, take the math and then draw it. That's what it is. It's a slope, and the change of slope. So if you look at money, it grows like this. And I'm looking at a camera right now, Michael. This is, of course, a radio show, but the slope changes. As it gets steeper and steeper, your outcome is greater and greater. And to fast forward, Warren Buffett, this year, he's probably worth $120 or $130 billion. 10% on $100 billion is $10 billion. All right, the value of the Royal Bank is $150, so that's basically a tenth of the Royal Bank. After 10 years, Buffett, just with how much money he's going to make this year personally, can buy a Royal Bank. So it takes time. It probably took Warren Buffett 50 years to get to his first bilski. How old is he, Jack? He's at 90...
Mid-90s, I do not know.
Mid-90s. 93, 94, unbelievably. Maybe. Unbelievable.
Charlie died at 99, so he definitely took advantage of the power of compounding.
Wow.
100%.
So 25 years is where it starts, my good friends. You got to log 20. The sooner you start, the better. What's the most important thing in investing? Starting. It really is. If you don't start, anything I say to you is completely irrelevant. When should you start? Yesterday. So you didn't do that. So start today, my friends. Please start today. Work, save, invest, repeat. And then you can log your 25 years. And after 40, oh my God, you're going to thank me profusely. That takes me to 98. I'm 58. So 40 to 98. So I don't know if I'm going to go as far as Charlie. I'm going to say I'm not going to go as far as Charlie.
You know, my favorite thing about Warren Buffett is that he's a billionaire who feels no obligation whatsoever to go on social media and tell us every single thing he thinks.
You know, he also is not a big believer in, he is a believer in spending his kids' inheritance. There we go. Here's a nice parlay, except he's not spending it. He's giving it to charity. Sort of the same thing. It's just, you know, opulence in a different degree. I think he wants to buy himself a ticket into heaven that way. But yeah, I think he's a pretty good, pretty honest guy. So Mike, let's talk about this. Spending your kids' inheritance. All right. You know, you got to be alive to spend it. That's one's risk. You got to make sure you have enough money for yourself to take yourself to the end comfortably. So let's start with, I think a Canadian retiring today, Michael, minimum $2 million. Minimum three is better. So
yeah, but we know that you're talking with people on a day-to-day basis who are high net worth individuals, people who have a lot more money than that. And nothing says spending your kids' inheritance like a Lamborghini.
That's a cool one. Eh? No, what's the big word? Yeah, Lambo. That's right. The cool kid. They're calling them. Oh, a Lambo. That would be fun, wouldn't it? I saw a used Lambo on Marketplace. It was $560,000. What's a new Lambo worth?
A Veneno Roadster is valued at about $8.3 million. It's the most expensive Lamborghini in the world. It was originally priced at $4.5 million, so there's some appreciation for you as well. But the most recent sale was about $8.3 million. The thing is that what I've learned is that you don't just sign on the dotted line to buy a Lamborghini for that price tag. There is ongoing cost associated with buying a supercar. The annual maintenance is anywhere from $5,000 to $15,000. And the Roadster, of course, because it's designed for high performance, it requires high quality tires. They'll be replaced more frequently than those on a standard vehicle if you drive it at high speeds. And if I know you, and I think I do, you would drive one at high speed. So the average tire cost on this Lambo is $3,000. That's each.
Yeah,
top of the line tire for a Honda Civic's $150.
Yeah. No, that's incredible. You know, it's funny. I had a client once try to chisel me on my fee that I charge, and I so held firm. I said, he said, "Wolf, everyone else is 25% cheaper than you. You got to drop price." I said, "No, I don't. In fact, I should raise price based on the performance." But I said, more importantly, I said, you have yourself a Porsche. How much is your oil change? Oh, about $800. I said, right. And my Audi is $125, and the Civic is $50. So it's not that you can't compare prices on prices. You know, what are you dealing with here? It's just remarkable. It's all about value, and you get value when you get a good experience. And that's what we deliver, is a good, holistic experience, along with a lot of fun. What about yachts, Michael? You want to talk about spending dough, large amounts, commission a yacht. Have you studied the yacht market and how long it takes to build a yacht and what they spend on yachts? And you want to talk about maintenance on an annual basis? How about the crew? Ho-ho!
Oh, well, here's what I know about yachts, because this is something that the team and I are still working on. When you buy a yacht, you need to allocate 10% of that purchase price just for the annual maintenance. Because, and when I say maintenance, I don't mean just like, you know, replacing a filter or something like that. I'm talking about
the barnacles. You got barnacles to scrape off the bottom. We'll start with that. You got to pull the thing out of the water. You got to store it. Oh, no. And the crew.
You got staff.
The crew
is critical as well. Now, listen, if I hooked you on the Lamborghini idea, keep in mind that the insurance premiums for a Lambo are as much as $40,000, depending on the location, the driving history, the coverage level. If you're like me, and I know I am, I'm going to be paying the high end. The parts and repairs are also expensive. The dealerships are advising buyers to set aside $30,000 a year just to maintain the thing. And since you're in Canada, and you won't be driving this car in Toronto in the slush that we're dealing with right now, proper storage and care in a climate-controlled facility is about $5,000 a year, depending on where you're going. So in the end, you're going to spend as much as $100,000 a year of your kid's inheritance just to keep this $8 million vehicle on the road. A Honda Civic, by comparison, has an average annual maintenance of $800.
I drove a Volkswagen Golf, and I just got rid of it 3 years ago, my friend. A Volkswagen diesel. I had it for 18 years, and my maintenance, you're right, it was about $800 a year. Insurance, I don't know, $1,200 a year. Tires, $100 a pop. Loved that car. Oh, I love that Volkswagen. Michael Hainsworth from BNN, he's moving on up. Who was that moving up? Was that the Jeffersons? That was the Jeffersons.
That was the Jeffersons. To a deluxe apartment.
Let's have some fun. Sci-Fi Radio. It's all about money. 640 Toronto.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto.
Go! I'm going to wake you up early because I'm going to take a ride with you. We're going down to the Honda shop. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Put on a ragged sweater.
Yeah. Ran out of gears there. But it was fun if you ever drove one of those puppies. Automatic clutch, just release on the throttle and change gear. Three up. I think it was three up. It must have been three up. I share with you that song. Michael Hainsworth is joining us. He's a big kid at heart. He wants to spend your kids' inheritance, and God bless him for that. But I was on Facebook Marketplace yesterday, and I was just scrolling. I don't know why I ended up on it. I was just looking at stuff for sale. And I guess that's where I saw that Lamborghini that Michael Hainsworth was talking about. What a beautiful piece of art that is. But then I came across a vintage 1969 Honda. Mini bike was what we call them. In mint condition, $10,000. 10 grand. I sent it to my buddy Mitch up in Halliburton. He used to have a Honda 70. It was same thing. It was a 3-speed. A lot more torque than you need more than the 50. 50 wasn't big enough. 70 was good. And he drove that thing and drove that thing and drove that thing for years. And I think he put 6,000 miles on it. And he also said, Wolf, remember, 6,000 miles driving through the bush is a lot of mileage. What a fun toy. But to think that would appreciate to 10 grand. And what do you do? The fellow selling it said, best thing to do is take it and hang it up in your man cave. 10 grand, you hang it up from the ceiling? I don't know. But it's your kid's inheritance. Hey, Michael? So what else would you hang up from the ceiling if you want to spend your kids' inheritance, Michael? Let's get serious here.
Well, before we went to the commercial break, we were talking about, you know, how much you could spend on a private island to get away from it all. You know, 500 grand on the low end, 65 million on the top
500
end.
500 grand? Island. You mean island? I could buy one
Chile,
of those.
Yeah.
I could buy one. Chile?
Absolutely.
Are you serious? How big of an island?
It's about 3.5 acres, and a luxury real estate firm, James Edition, is telling us that the high end is in the Maldives, and that's including an airstrip and accommodation for 150 of your closest friends. But I think you don't want to go that far.
How much was that one?
So that one was $60 to $65 million.
Okay, we're getting close. Wow.
Yeah. Now, back at home, like you don't want to go that far away, a private island in Georgian Bay, that's $20 million. But when you take into account the cost of a Georgian Bay private island, you also have to take into account the maintenance in Ontario for the property, utilities, transportation, insurance. And if you want to take into account the staff labor, the property taxes, just keeping the island afloat, as it were, can cost you anywhere from $45,000 to $165,000 a year. Of course, if you are going to find yourself in a private island on Georgian Bay, you're definitely going to want to use the Wolfgang Klein private helicopter, and if you want to install the helipad at your getaway, that's about $200,000 once you factor in the construction, the engineering, the permits, the environmental impact assessment as well.
What do you think of those? Jack, you got yourself an island, sort of.
It's not a private island, but
it's not private, yeah. You're on an island.
But yeah, there's expenses for sure, and you're talking about $500,000 in Chile. What do you actually get with that, Michael? Are you actually getting just the island, or is there accommodations there?
You are only getting the island. So you have to take into account you're going to want to build on it. You're going to need a way to get to it. You're also going to need a way to get the laborers to it to build it in the first place. And then the cost of putting a helipad on a private island in Chile is far less than in Georgian Bay. The rules are a little more relaxed, so you'll probably be able to get away with spending about half that price.
Did you watch Succession, Michael?
You know what? I did. I tried. But I felt like I was looking in on the world that I didn't belong to, and I just couldn't keep watching it. It just the nobody on that show is a hero. They're all villains.
They are, but you know what I could pretty quickly belong to if I could. I don't think it'd hurt you. It should be too hard. You could adapt the private jet thing. You just walk to that, walk across that parking lot. It'd take me maybe one go. I'd figure it out. I could figure that out and get comfortable with that environment. Yeah. Yeah, private jet. Oh,
Michael brings up a really good point, though, with building costs. We actually just had a friend of ours talking about Turks and Caicos building out there. Luxury property.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
You
talk about expenses. We also know people that have built in Bahamas. When you build in these luxury areas, especially far away, building costs are exceptionally higher.
Yeah. The consumption tax, the places like this do not have a lot of taxation. They have consumption taxation. So when you buy ceramic tiles, the tax could be 50 to 60% on those tiles. Everything is imported. Transportation costs. Yeah, no, we have another fella. And it's called the Caitlin Group. They sent us an email about a new project in Turks and Caicos. And you're talking about $1,000 to $1,500 US per square foot. Turnkey operation, 32 development. But the prices range as high as $22 million U.S. for 8,000 square feet, down to $4 million U.S. For 2,500 square feet. Now, you got a pool, a private pool, and I guess you are right on the ocean, white sandy beach. But there's some serious, serious jag.
How about building in the Bahamas, flying in tiles, Wolf?
Oh, no, we have a personal story about that, Michael. Some guy was doing it in Bahamas, but instead of buying the tiles there, he would pack his suitcase with ceramic tiles and overhead to boot, overhead compartment. Oh, yeah. Funny character, my good friend. Funny, funny character. Let's take one final stab at it. You know, if your kids really cheese you off and you want to really get back at them, what else?
Invest in art. Invest in art. You mentioned this at the beginning of our conversation here. Investing in art. If a boat is a hole in the water you throw money into, investing art is a hole in your wall you spackle with dollar bills. Investing in fine art involves several costs beyond the initial purchase price. Understanding those costs, it's crucial if you're considering it as an investment. Of course, you've got the purchase price, the most obvious cost, the price of the artwork itself. It can range from thousands to millions of bucks depending on the artist, the piece, the history, the rarity. But then there's something that most people aren't aware of. It's the buyer's premium. If you buy at auction, there's a buyer's premium, which is a percentage of the final bid.
Yeah, how much is that, Michael?
Anywhere from 10 to 25%.
Wow. Have you watched the on Netflix The Price of Everything?
Oh, man, that's a good show.
Isn't it good?
Yeah.
What a world. Like a total different world. Again, this is a money show. And there's a lot of ways to invest money and spend money and think about money and who has it and who doesn't have it. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are underprivileged, unfortunate in this world. And there's some people who are beyond blessed when it comes to financial excesses. And if you want to find the excesses, just look at the art market. And I think there's a tax benefit in the United States when it comes to art as well. So incredible. And a friend of mine once bumped into Ken Thompson, and the Thompson family has been known for collecting art, and of course, an old publishing company, and their generation of building art. And that's who has a lot of this art. It's the wealthy, wealthy who's two of each and every country. And they want to diversify, and they often diversify into a bit of art. But he actually viewed his private collection. And so there was art on the wall, Michael, but there's also art in these cabinets. So the really precious art that was susceptible to the elements, they put in this special vault. And so you have to open up the vault, pull out the art, look at it, appreciate it, and put it back in the vault. Kind of odd, eh? But interesting nonetheless, eh, Mike?
The conservation and maintenance to do something like that, because artwork requires maintenance to preserve the condition, and that includes the climate-controlled storage, professional cleaning, conservation work. That tops out about $20,000 per year. Now, but when you buy art, of course, you need to make sure that it's actually real. The legal fees, the advisory fees, the consulting with art advisors, your lawyers, your tax experts, that can add to the overall cost. And that's typically 20% of the value of the art itself.
Wow, Mike, I do got to fly. And on that note, I want to wish you a great weekend. Sci-Fi Radio here on 640 each and every Saturday, bringing on such fine guests as Mr. Michael Hainsworth. He is the podcast expert, Where's My Jetpack. If you have any corporate requirement for developing content, video, Michael Hainsworth, he is a very, very talented man, and he's available to you at a low introductory price of Michael. Have a good weekend, my good friends, and thank you as always. If you want to learn more about our process, visit WolfgangKlein.com, TheWolfOnBayStreet.com. Don't be shy to reach out to Jack or I. We're here for you. No question too big, no question too small. We answer them all. It may be a brief answer, but we'll answer it. I promise. Have a lovely weekend. Thank you.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email wolfandjack@wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.